He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and unfortunately, we don't have Jay on today because I've got a couple of comments I'm going to make that I'd love to have his intake on. On the headlines in some of the periodicals that have come out recently since the last show, there are a couple of amusing things that we'll talk about, and a couple of serious things, or one serious thing we'll talk about, in that the COVID virus situation is starting to hit dealers in some of the states again. And we in the Northeast here, or right up in our broadcast area, went through a period where you could not go into dealerships to actually go on the floor and look at vehicles and engage in person-to-person connection for the buying process, if that's the way you want to try and buy a vehicle. And most of the dealerships, I think, across the country had opened up in the last couple of months. And now, apparently, in Michigan, a couple of dealerships have been forced to close, at least for a few days, and do a cleansing process and making it, again, possibly a problem for the public to go in and buy cars person to person.
Had she opened dealerships?
Excuse me?
I said, had the governor opened dealerships?
In Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. Apparently they had, because they had to close them down. From COVID-infected employees. And one of the comments in the article was that apparently none of the public had come in direct or close contact to any of the people that were affected. But the dealerships had to close, and they have to go through the cleansing process. So it may happen here in Connecticut. I don't know what's going to happen. We don't need to talk about this. It's not a fun topic to talk about, but that's just a start to the show. The next thing I want to talk about is high horsepower vehicles, and this is where I'd love to have Jay's input because he's a big fan of high horsepower vehicles. I'm sort of a fan of high power vehicles to a point, but my take on these high powered vehicles is how fast you need to go in an acceleration sort of mode to be happy with the amount of acceleration you get with these vehicles that have extraordinarily high horsepower engines. And we talked about the big trucks. Ford has been sort of an exclusive with its Raptor pickup truck for a long time. And now Dodge has joined the fray. And the latest issue of Car and Driver has a full-blown article on it and with pictures of the trucks in the desert flying off of a desert dune or something with all four wheels off the ground and obviously doing things that no real user is going to do with these trucks if they feel so inclined to go out and buy them. Not to mention the price points of these trucks as tested were between $74,000 and $90,000. And the horsepower ratings for them, I believe it was 702 horsepower for the Dodge Ram 1500 TRX, which is what we're referencing as the competitor to the Ford Raptor. And the 450 horsepower of the Ford Raptor, which is significantly less, if you want to compare numbers, to the 2021 Ram TRX. In any event, we had all these horsepower wars, and they still are going on in the passenger car vehicle or sports car vehicle segment of the market, automobile market, for years. And Audi is joining the fray with what Car and Driver calls the evil genius version of the latest version of Audi's wagon with a, what is the horsepower of it? It's, I'll get to it in a minute. It is about a 591 horsepower version of the Avant, the Audi Avant. And it's going to be available at some dealers in this country eventually. But they call it, the plus features, as they call it in their mini review, is mind-melting, brain-rattling V8. light-footed Dynamics, fun for the whole family. I don't know what the whole family wants to be in this vehicle when it's being used the way it can be used. Minus thirstier than a salmon in the Sahara. I guess seeking water. Exotic price, $120,000. Conclusion, equals a better version of the 600-horsepower SUVs that everyone is peddling these days. Now, to that, I go to a 2004 Jaguar XJR, which I have owned since 2004, which back then came with a 390-horsepower, and it wasn't a brain-rattling V8, but it was an accelerative, it has accelerative forces that are more than satisfactory for me in going from 0 to 60, if I want to even do that on a regular basis, using up extra fuel in the process. But back then, it was slated to be able to do 0 to 60 in, I believe, under 5 seconds, somewhere between 4 and 5 seconds. And that, whatever it does it for me, is more than adequate. And now you've got 600 horsepower equivalents in SUVs, 450 to 700 horsepower equivalents in pickup trucks, and now Audi's putting this monster V8 into their Avant, RS6 they call it, and peddling it for around $120,000. The 0 to 60 acceleration point, rolling 5 to 60 miles an hour, is 4.4 seconds. Now, that's not a whole lot faster than my 2004 XJR Jaguar, which is considerably lighter, I'm sure, because it's got an aluminum body, and it's only two-wheel drive. Has a governor-limited top speed of 156 miles an hour. Now, nobody who's going to buy one of these in the U.S. is going to ever be able to really use it the way it can be used. We don't have German Autobahn-like speed limitless byways to be able to play with it on that kind of roadway. And we have wonderfully winding roads around here, but you certainly can't go too fast around many of them, Jill, as you obviously know, because they're narrow and they have blind corners. And now with everything going on, there are people and bicycles on all these narrow roads, so you really can't go any faster in these vehicles than you can in what you're driving and I'm driving. But be it as it may, Audi will probably sell every one of these $120,000 RS6 Avants that they can get into the United States. I know of one friend of mine who is waiting desperately to get one, and I don't know that he has been able to actually get it yet, but he's certainly got an order in, but he's been waiting at least 3 months. Exotic cars are exotic cars, and they offer features that the normal cars don't offer.
I know, but they're kind of fun.
What?
There's an element of fun to it.
There's an element in fun. There's an element in bragging rights capability that one can talk about their vehicle, like how fast you can go this and do that and how many horsepower it has and all that kind of thing. And the people who can afford it have fun doing it. To that end, I've noticed a number of Porsche 911 Carreras rolling around our northwest corner over this last weekend. And there was a line of sports cars, which there were only about eight to ten of them in there, and I could not give you all the models that went by me going the opposite direction I was going when I came upon them. The only one I really noted was the newest model of the Corvette. And to that topic, I bring the following thought, because I have been wondering how the sales of that, the new model of, it's a mid-engine version of the Corvette as opposed to the front engine that we've had for decades. And I've been wondering how Corvette enthusiasts of the old style feel about the new style. And while there'll be plenty of buyers for the new mid-engine Corvette, I'm sure, there's a local Corvette enthusiast here in Sharon, Connecticut, who is absolutely not interested in ever owning a mid-engine Corvette. And he happens to have a I think it's a six-year-old C6, which he is in total love with. It has 381 horsepower, I believe, and he thinks it's the best Corvette model in the old version that he's ever owned, because he's owned five, I believe, Corvettes before this, or including this one. But he has absolutely no interest in ever wanting to own a mid-engine Corvette. And I think that there's some purists out there in the Corvette land that probably feel the same way. And I've never had a Corvette, so I don't have... I don't think that the mid-engine is... It may be mechanically and technologically better than the old version, but the last model years of the old version were just about as good as you could get for a front-engine sports car in the Corvette line, I think. And anybody who... I'm sure... I do not know whether the stocks of the old version have actually dried up or not, but I don't think they're going to last a year beyond the last production model on dealers' lots if my hunch about the old models being more popular than new is correct. Where do we go from here?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Because obviously you're not getting a vet.
No, I'm not.
But what I always do want to ask you is there anything, you know, if there were a magic leprechaun that could give you the car that you just felt like driving for a week, what are the cars you just feel like driving? Whether or not you...
I would like to drive the new Hummer.
Okay.
I would also like to drive the new Rivian pickup truck and SUV version when they get on the road and see what they're all about, because when I went to the last auto show that we could go to, and we were not able to go to an auto show in 2020 because of the COVID virus, and I don't know whether we'll go to one again in next year or not, but Rivian was on the floor at that show, and they had both a pickup truck and the SUV, which is more like, looks a lot like the Ford Expedition, GMC, Tahoe, or Suburbans in size, and they were all battery, and I quite liked the look, and thought that they might be successful once they got to the market, and they are not yet on the market.
Okay.
But I'd like to drive those.
And when are they meant to come on the market?
I think sometime during 2021.
Okay. And vehicles that are currently available... Again, if the magic leprechaun were just to populate your driveway.
Well,
randomly.
You know, I used to own Audis, and I owned Audis from back in the 1974 era right up through my last Audi purchase of 2001, which was the old version of what the current Audi A8. And, of course, I am very much fond of the old version and still have the 2001, which is a wonderful size. Now matched more like by the Audi A6 versions of the A6 than they were when I bought the A8, because all those versions below the A8 were smaller in size than they are today, and they've grown so much from model line. The A4s have grown up to the way the old A6s were in terms of size and interior specs, and the A6s, in my view, have grown into what the old A8s were in terms of size and interior specifications. The technology is much greater in the new ones than the old ones, but I had occasion to look at A5 Cabriolets recently and to drive one, and I found that car absolutely wonderful to drive and quite liked it. In fact, I do like it. It is probably, you know, all the convertibles that are out there, BMW has a convertible, Mercedes has got a convertible, Audi's got a convertible. We mentioned this on a show or two recently. And there's not much legroom in any of these convertibles, even though they're four doors. No, they're not four doors. They're all two doors. But if you're a tall driver in these vehicles or a tall person sitting in the passenger seat and you have to put the seats back for appropriate legroom comfort in the front, anybody in the back seat is not going to be particularly happy for a long drive, but you're not going to use these convertibles for long drives. As we mentioned, I think, in last week's show, when we had beautiful fall weather, there was a there were numerous people out in their convertible vehicles of all kinds, from Corvettes to four-seaters. And it was wonderful to see. It was wonderful to see all the convertibles out and about, enjoying the wonderful weather we had. Which I think I said on that show, mentioned that the Americans have basically dropped the convertible sedan versions. Mustang still has a convertible. The Camaro has a convertible, and the Corvette has a convertible. But as far as true four-passenger sedan convertibles, I don't believe the American market. American manufacturers have one currently in production, at least in this country that I know of. Jay could dispel that, and he might do that if he listens to the show. But
we can mention it to him again.
We can mention it to him again. But it was nice to see the convertible market is alive and well. Of course, you've got the Mazda MX-5, which comes in a convertible form, too, and that's one of the truest two-door cars to have retained a lot of its original roots. With only a modest increase in the size of the vehicle from the days of the first generations of the MX-5s, or then called Miatas. And they are very popular, too, as true two-seaters. They're economical to run, reliable as all out, as the Japanese and the Asian cars tend to be. And I will say the American cars now are very reliable as well. So we're not going to discuss negativity in that front. You know, you buy a car today, as Jay has said, all the cars produced today are excellently reliable in most instances, unless you happen to get one that might have some teething problems in a new version of a vehicle, such as the Jeep Cherokees had in the 2014-2015 versions of the Cherokee redesign. Not the Grand Cherokee, the Cherokees. There were a lot of transmission issues with what was a relatively new 9-speed automatic transmission that was put into them. And so since then, I believe they've gotten much more reliable from start to finish because all those teething problems have been worked out. But just about all the cars, any car you buy today is probably going to be very reliable and last well into 100,000 miles or more if it's properly maintained by its owner.
Okay, so one other totally random question. If you were, if somebody said, hey, what people carrier would you recommend? Or, hey, need a blank.
I have not driven the two Asian Hyundai Kia versions of a people carrier that you're referring to possibly. They are like the Ford Expedition, the GM Suburban, and that kind. They call them mid-size or large mid-size vehicles as opposed to large size, but they do not have long wheelbase versions yet, at any rate, like GM does with its Suburban, and I think the Ford Expedition may have a long wheelbase version too. But those are getting the two Asian models and their sister cars like the Ford and Mercury used to be sisters' cars in the Ford camp. Vehicles with apparently quite different driving characteristics. But the common characteristics are that they both are three-row capability vehicles, so they can hold seven or eight passengers, depending on the seating configuration. They both will hold luggage behind the rear, the third seat, albeit a bit smaller than if it was only two seat, if the third seat is folded down, but both can hold a bit of luggage if you are using these people carriers as you are designating them to be, as possibly long haul vacation minded vehicles, which is what you see in the summertime. They'll come, people will have roof carriers on these plus what they can put in behind the seat inside the vehicle, and they both have trailer. They all have trailer. All the vehicles, besides the Hyundai Palisade and the Kia something or other Telluride, I believe it is, can tow boat trailers behind them as well. Those are really excellent people carriers, and the Fords and the Chevrolets are not far behind. They may even be better to some people, but you have the a convenience issue of American dealerships being far more numerous on in the Ford, the FCA, Ford, Lincoln, and Chevrolet companies than the Asian and European companies' dealership numbers. So in a lot of ways, there's a convenience factor to buying American designed vehicles over the Asian designed vehicles if you are concerned about how far away it is to get to a dealership to have routine maintenance done during the course of warranty work at least, which is what I've always recommended on this show. If you buy a car new, you should use the new car dealership through the warranty period at least, because there are all sorts of benefits you get from sticking with the selling manufacturer's dealership. From in Fiat Chrysler's case, as an example, you get new parts put into a vehicle of the Fiat Chrysler line, such as a Cherokee, as I just had done, and you find that they come with a 2-year, 24,000-mile guarantee, which I recently discovered, much to my delight, was in effect on brakes that I had put into my 2015 Jeep Cherokee less than 2 years ago, and they were, the discs were warped and pitted, and I went to get new, I asked them to check it out, and they said, oh, they're all pitted, and by the way, it won't cost you anything to have all four brakes replaced. And you won't get that in the mom-and-pop shops that do a lot of repairs for people because of their convenience locations. And you go get an oil change at a local place in Lakeville, for example, and you get great service there, but the parts won't come necessarily with a 2-year, 24,000-mile guarantee, which apparently is what Fiat Chrysler does on all the parts. And you see that in very fine print at the bottom of your billing slip when you pick up the car. And you need a magnifying glass to read it. It's just like the small print we see on TV ads when they're harping all these end-of-year specials and all that, and then you read the fine print and find that you're limited to 10,000 miles a year if it's a lease program offer or something like that. But you can't read it. So it was a very interesting thing, because when I had the first brake job done on the Cherokee, it cost $1,000 for, it was approximately $250 a corner, for new brakes and rotors, new pads, discs, and well, rotors, whatever they are, at all four corners. And I had to have them done, and it was within less than 2 years from when they were done last, and it was $0 for the replacement. And I must say, it is nice to have new brakes when old ones are chattering or making your steering wheel wobbly, or you can feel a shimmy in the front end or the whole vehicle because of warped rotors or whatever else might be wrong.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.